It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlanta keeps it runs. 20-15 to the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Lanning!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Lanning out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on into this week's edition of Barely Audible. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman, joined, as always, by the quarterback, Austin Arnott. And Jeff Woody was on here just a few minutes ago, but something happened to his microphone. It cut off. We could hear him, but he couldn't hear us. I guess it was his headphones or something. I don't know. If he gets it to work, he's going to jump back on with us. If not, Austin, you and I will handle it. As always, Austin, it's been, 7 days since I've seen you last, since we tore up Charlotte, North Carolina for the ACC media days. We had a good time.
That's right. Hey, and again, we are called Barely Audible for a reason. My voice today is a little bit out. I was at Monday Night Football last night watching my Vikings get dragged by the Bears, which was not fun, in Jay Cutler's return. So I am here still trying to record with half of a voice. The offensive line of the Vikings was putrid, and that was my main voice of all night, screaming at the tackles of the Minnesota Vikings for not stepping up and blocking somebody. And Alex Boom got concussed, so that's the third offensive lineman that's been hurt in the last 6 weeks. So not a big deal.
Yeah, so
ready. We're ready for – bring on the North.
You're ready for the draft.
Yep.
Just prepare for the draft. No, so, it sucks for your Vikings, but I appreciate the hospitality last week, ACC Media Days, as all three of us were off for the bye week as there was no game to rehash or anything like that. So always good seeing you and catching up. So you said your Vikings were putrid and they played bad. That brings us to why we gather here each and every week on Barely Audible to break down the Iowa State game. And, you know, they've only won one game all year. They lost this time to Kansas State, 31-26. The Vampire, as Chris Williams calls him on CycloneFanatic.com, he strikes again in Bill Snyder, beats us, I believe, for the ninth year in a row, and eight of those nine have been within an eight-point victory for Kansas State. So, tough losses. We always play them well for whatever reason, and, you know, this time again, they come to Ames and beat us 31-26. So, I don't want to rehash all the bad stuff, and I don't think anyone listening does, and I know you don't. So let's talk about the positives. There are a few positives to take away from this game. Then we'll get to the gambling picks, and then we'll talk about some other NFL stuff in the World Series. So Jacob Park threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns and only threw one interception. Was that a positive for you, Austin? How'd you feel about his play?
Yeah, it was a positive. I mean, there was a focus in the game plan to get him in often and throw the ball downfield, because that's what Jacob Park specializes in. He has a great – I mean, we talked about this early on in the year. The kid throws a great deep ball, and he's very accurate with said deep ball. You know, I wasn't the most fired up about his percentage. I mean, 19 of 35, that's barely over – I mean, we're a little bit over halfway there. But still, if you look at the completions that we had compared to the ones we didn't, that Montgomery pass in the end zone, that's what that one's hurting you. But it's the same as always. It seems like we're just a little bit away. We're a little bit away. And tweaking mechanics, doing all those things to try and make you lock in on what you're supposed to do on every single snap is not few and far between, but it's not every single play for us. We don't have the attention to detail that real good football teams do quite yet. So we're still going through that. But I can't take a positive away from Park the way he played. Over 300, anytime you throw the ball over 300 yards, that's great. Alan Lazard had a big day. That's something we always want to happen. 8 catches, 134 yards. But the one thing, you know, that I like the most is that when you look at this game, you know, you look at the stat line, you see a lot of Jacob Park throwing the ball. Well, Joel Lanning still had 10 carries for 74 yards and a touchdown. You know, 7.5 yards a clip. That's something to build off of. It seems like they are starting to find an identity on offense. Okay, we know that Joel Lanning's probably going to do more of the bootleg, more of the quarterback draw, a lot of the zone read stuff, and they know they're going to do a lot of the drop back with Park. It's not tendencies too bad, but when you look at the contrasting styles of quarterbacks, it's still fun to watch these guys play under center. So, you know, we're not winning every single game, but it's still fun to watch these guys play and watch them compete.
So I'll get to why we're not winning games in a second. But another positive, I think, is the secondary. They're playing well. But it may not matter because teams can run all over us. The Rush defense, I looked today. It's Tuesday, the 1st of November. Our Rush defense is ranked 115th out of 128. Baylor ran for nearly 500 yards on us. Texas ran for 220. TCU for 230. UNI ran for over 230. And Kansas State ran for 250 yards on us on Saturday. This Rush defense is just, it stinks. It's terrible. No way else to put it. But the secondary is playing well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've been a day one guy with PB and Kamari Cotton-Moya. Those guys are, you know, they're top notch for our defensive secondary there. But like you said, rushing, run defense. The number one thing when you, and you've played with a lot of football, Zach, so have I. The number one thing a football coach wants to talk about in defending their team, we got to stop the run. The number one thing an offensive football coach, even with Tom Herman, when we were in the spread all the time, you have to what? Establish the run.
Yep.
So teams are establishing the run against us and doing it at will. And that's tough because it also coincides with our offense. You know, the type of attack we have, you know, we can go three and out real fast. And then once again, we're back on the field against a physical, you know, K-State's always known for being large and physical up front. So that's exactly what they were on Saturday. We knew that was going to happen. They were going to try and run the ball down our throats. And, you know, early on, not with much success, but as the game gets on and on, we have, and as we all are well aware of, our depth is nowhere near needs to be up front to be able to continue to, you know, every single Saturday get in a car crash. And, you know, these guys are playing a lot of snaps, the defensive linemen. So, and we just don't have anybody else we can put out there right now. So that's the main culprit of why we're so bad on against the run. We're tired, and when it gets to be very physical in there, those guys are, you know, those guys are banged up. It's game what? That was game eight of the season, you know, with so many reps for those
eight,
defensive front
like
guys. Yeah, eight games in a season of taking that blunt force a lot. I mean, you don't have backups. It's very tough.
Yeah. So you mentioned something to me in text today, and I want to get your full thoughts and opinions on it because I thought it was interesting. You, as a former, what were you, two-time team captain, three-time team captain? Austin?
Two.
Two-time team captain, starter at quarterback, obviously a very important position that is full of leadership. You won a ton of games for Iowa State. You also were a part of some losing seasons as well. To you, what is going wrong with this football team right now that has them in such a slump? At the end of the day, no matter how you cut it, they've shown promise. They've showed that they've gotten better at times. Position groups that lack depth are playing well. You got a really good receiver, a really good safety. But at the end of the day, no matter how you cut it, no matter how you slice it, this team only has one win. What does that say to you, and what is going on in there?
Tells me one thing. I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of kind of after I left, and you know, you saw all those different quarterback changes. And the one thing that I kind of look back to and see this team, you know, leadership comes from within a team. You can have coaches there telling you to do this, you know, this, that, and the other, but there's got to be some accountability in that locker room, and they got to have more leadership as a team, not only as a, you know, okay, the defensive secondary probably is the captains of those defense. Like they're the guy that play well, they lead by example. We need to have that throughout every single group. That was the good teams that I was on, the teams who, you know, won the Insight Bowl. We had individuals leaders within position groups. You know, you go into the meeting room when I was a senior, Mike O'Connell was, you know, dang near running that meeting with Coach Elliott in there. You know, you had guys, Leonard Johnson did that later in his career, James Smith, another guy. You have these leaders that are, you know, appointed by their peers to lead position groups. Right now I'm seeing a couple leaders, but I'm not seeing, you know, when things get tough and when it's, you know, when it's 31-26 in the fourth quarter and you're trailing, you got to score to win the game. It looks like we get to that position, oh, here we go again. It's the same mentality. That's where our leader steps in and says, hey, enough of this, guys. We got to turn this around. And it's more of a mind thought and a process than anything. You know how to play football. You know what to do. You know the call. Just execute it. Execute it to the fullest of your ability. So when I see those guys struggling at the end of the games, it's technique going away, attention to detail going away, and that directly correlates with leadership, in my opinion. Because if you hold each other accountable, these things won't happen. So that's accountability. 1-7 means that we got some guys that probably aren't the most accountable out there. So it's tough to watch, but this team is getting better. There's no doubt about that from where we came at the beginning of the year. it's just frustrating to see them not take that next step yet. I know it's still early on in the Coach Campbell era, but it's one of those things that they need to take that next step.
So you mentioned, you know, holding each other accountable, executing, playing with the proper technique, and just getting it done. And Jeff's mentioned that a few times earlier in past weeks of the show. But is it really as simple as that, or is it something that, you know, you mentioned leadership. Is it something that the leaders need to step up and demand? Is it something that the coaches should demand each and every day? Not that they aren't, but, I mean, it's tough going out there every single Saturday and watching the same mistakes and penalties get the team beat.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's kind of what I'm alluding to, Zach, is trying to just reinforce that each position group needs a leader, and those leaders have to hold everyone in the group accountable, and then those said leaders hold each other accountable with the other leaders of the position group. So it's got to come from within, from every single position. You know, everybody's not going to be fired up about coming to practice Tuesday. They probably weren't very fired up about being there today. 1-7, middle of the, you know, the season's almost over, you know. Obviously not going to a bowl game. One of the things that will not happen unless, you know, outside looking in, being one of those teams with 5 wins, which, you know, best of luck to you. You got
in midterms Thursday, so. This week and last week too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on too.
Yeah, I mean, this is when the grind catches you. And that's why really good teams, like, you know, I'm not going to say Oklahoma's really good, but they're 6-2 and they know how to win in this environment. You got to be able to balance. I mean, you got to be accountable. It's the number one thing of the word, you know, you can't let anything of the outside factors deter you. When you get on that field, it's got to be locked into what you're achieving, because there's a lot of teams that are doing it way better than we are right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to talk about this, you know, leading up to the Kansas State game, but obviously we didn't have a show, but you and I talked about it at dinner last Wednesday night, and I wanted to bring it up on air. You play Kansas State, obviously, every single time, every single year in college. And I asked you at dinner the other night, just as a fun question, who is the best player that you feel like on offense that you ever played against in college? The player that you left the stadium and you were like, wow, that dude's the man. And you played against offensive players like DeMarco Murray, Adrian Peterson.
Sam Bradford.
You know, Sam Bradford. You played against some of the best. And you said a name that I never would have expected you to say. You said Jordy Nelson of Kansas State. Tell the listeners and the fans, you know, what you saw in Jordy Nelson and what made you say that in that game. Take us there.
I just remember being a redshirt freshman. That was one of the first games that I really had an impact on the game. Came in and we let a touchdown drive late in the game to give us the lead. But coming off the field and competing against a guy like that, I mean, at the time, I can't even remember who Kansas State's quarterback was, and he probably doesn't remember who I am either. But still, Jordy Nelson was dominant. I mean, in that loss, he probably was targeted about 25 times, 13 balls. I'll never forget, 13 balls for like 117 yards and a touchdown. But he was open every single time he ran a route. He's open every single time he ran a route. Nobody could run with him. It was like Todd – okay, we all – Cyclone fans remember watching Todd Blythe when he got open on a vertical run by people. That was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Imagine seeing somebody beat somebody that badly on every single route that he runs. The guy was the guy and still is a technician. And, you know, the story's even greater. You know, he's a walk-on. He's a walk-on Kansas State guy. Now look at him. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. But he was a guy that, you know, I, like you said, stood next to Adrian Peterson, DeMarco Murray, all those big-time guys from Oklahoma, Brandon Weeden, Dez Bryant, you know, Justin Blackman, the list goes on and on. But the best college football player that I saw with my own two eyes that I played against, not named Adonikan Sue, is Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, and Sue was pretty good. And then also kind of brings me to the next point that I wanted to bring up. The final game of the 2008 season, the final game you went to Kansas State again, I believe. I know this game very well because Cedric Johnson, a good friend of mine I grew up with, was on the team at the time. It was a month before I joined the team the next semester. And you went into Manhattan and set a Iowa State passing record. We lost 38-30, but you threw 31-45 for 440 yards and 3 touchdown passes, and the offense had 630 yards of offense. Now, that's great. You know, that's awesome, but the team still lost is what you're going to say. But that's, you know, 7 years ago. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear how you and the rest of your teammates kept coming to work after 9 straight losses coming into that and coming in and had an opportunity to go in and beat Kansas State, played really well, lost by just 8, and still racked up over 600 yards of offense. Because that's something that this team is going to have to do over the next few weeks, you know, because we don't want to see them go out there and get rolled by every single team, because there's a possibility that there's some really good teams left on that schedule other than Kansas. what did you guys do as leaders and as the quarterback and as an offense and as a defense to still come together and get to work every single day? I mean, this was during Thanksgiving week. So over 600 yards of offense, you know, you guys didn't quit. And it may turn out to be a 2-10 season like that season did. What can this team do, you know, compared to what you guys did to have such good output?
Hey, I mean, we as a group, I remember, you know, I had RJ Summerall I was throwing to. RJ had a great year receiving that year.
Yeah.
You know, guys like Colin Franklin, Derek Catlett, we had some guys that, you know, Jake Williams out there. I mean, we had guys that made plays. But the one thing about that group of guys and why I cherish, you know, that season, yeah, we were 2-10 that year. We were 2-10. Let that sink in, folks. We won our first two and then we lost 10 straight.
Yep.
However, that group, and you can speak to the character of these guys, Zach, when you got there, but these guys that were with, you know, we fought every day. I mean, yep. We were competitive. We were very competitive. You know, we were going to come out there, and we knew, and it was the same kind of situation right here. We knew that our defense probably wasn't going to be able to get enough stops to win a game. So at the time, we just foot on the gas and try and score. The one thing about that game that you said 630 yards offense, I still think we only scored 27 points. So it's just one of those
30,
things.
It was 30.
Football is a – it was 30? Okay, football is a crazy, crazy sport. And if you don't have the talent, you know, everybody, it seems, can move the ball between the 20s.
Yep.
Talent, play calling, when it comes down inside the red zone, can you make plays? That's what it comes down to. Even in the NFL, that's why the quarterbacks that play make the big bucks that they do. But the guys that I played with were very, very, very competitive. And once we got rolling, it was fun. You know, we had A-Rob in the backfield as a young A-Rob. We had Jason Scales. We had guys who, you know, weren't the most successful at Iowa State that year. But these guys worked hard every single day. And I think that this team has that. And they're so close to turning the corner with these with attention to details. It's one wrong step. It's one misread. It's a fumble when you're trying to get that extra yard and you stick the ball out and it gets popped out. It's things that they can be in control of. So that's the number one thing. The Cyclone offense is in control of their own destiny, as well as Cyclone defense, too. They have nothing to lose every single week. Let it all hang out. Play. Just play the game. It's football. You've been playing it for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
Yep, and I agree. So now we turn the page, and the team plays on national TV on Thursday night on ESPN against Oklahoma. And I'm hoping both teams just run the crap out of the ball so we get it over with and flip it over TNT for Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Golden State Warriors. KD versus Russ, round one. I'm excited about it.
Wow.
But let's talk quickly about this game. Austin, I think I saw a stat that Iowa State's won 10 of their last 13 Thursday night games. So that's a positive to take into the game. But, you know, I'm not expecting us to win. I'd love for us to win. You never know what
– Oklahoma's the only team that Iowa State has never beat in Big 12 play.
Oh, awesome. Great stat. Thank you, Austin.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, Arnoldopedia there. So I don't expect us to win. I want us to come out and play well, and if we do win, I will be super happy about it. But how do you see this game playing out, you know, and if we are to win it, how does Iowa State win this game? You know, it is at home, and this isn't a great OU team.
Right. I think I saw the line today. They're like a 3-touchdown underdog at home. This is one of those games that, you know, is one of those – you look at it from the outside, okay, Oklahoma's got a lot of firepower on offense. We're struggling on defense. What gives? Probably our defense. But, hey, it's why you play the game. It's why you play the game on Thursdays and Saturdays. Do I think Oklahoma is a lot better than we are? Yes. Will Oklahoma probably score a lot of points? Yes. But is Iowa State fully capable of competing with Oklahoma for four quarters? They've shown that all year that they can compete for two quarters, three quarters. If they put a full game together, who knows what the outcome can be? I mean, Oklahoma's got playmakers everywhere. We understand that. We know that. But looking at it from Iowa State perspective, you have nothing to lose. You go out here with a clear mind, and you go and play the football game. Put all this stuff aside. Coming off of a short week of rest, why not? What a better time than now. So, yeah. I mean, they just got to have a positive outlook, you know, because everyone is doubting them. So that's when you bow your neck in that locker room and your backs are against the wall. Even though you're at home, you know, a lot of these people don't think you're going to win this game. They're just coming to hang out. You got to go out there and show them and give those fans, you know, a little bit of payback on the money they've been spending for those season tickets.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, getting ready for a game on short rest. I remember my memories of playing games on Thursdays and Fridays. There's positives and negatives, obviously, like everything. The negatives are there's no real day off. You come right usually on the Sundays after football games, you'd come in, you'd watch film, you'd lift, you'd run, and you'd put on shoulder pads and a helmet and go out there and kind of work through your mistakes and start game planning for and working on some of the defenses and offenses that you'll be seeing throughout the week preparing for the game. Then on Monday, you have the day off. It's your day to rest, relax, run errands, and catch up with your schoolwork and just enjoy being a regular student. And Tuesday, it's back to the grind. Where on if you're playing a game Thursday or Friday, it's Sunday is the cleanup day and working out and jogging. And then Monday, there's no day off. It's right to your Tuesday practice, which is your hardest practice of the week. It's full pads. It's getting after it. And then you're going throughout the rest of the week. Now, the positives of that are you've got most of the time all weekend off to watch football all day Saturday and Sunday, go to church with your family, do whatever you want to do. What is the differences of game planning in that quarterback room, in that defensive coordinator's room, in that office coordinator's room? What is the difference of the game playing? How quick a turnaround is that, and how tough is that as you've had to do that before?
Yeah, it's quick. So they probably popped in on Sunday, watched the film, did the usual thing they do on Sunday, but they did it, but with kind of an accelerated pace. So what they probably did is they were probably there quite a bit on Sunday. And you know, who I don't want's job is the GAs Saturday night after that football game.
Yeah.
You know, unloading, deloading, all that good stuff. But, you know, they're in there, and Monday would have been like – so they would have bumped everything up. Monday would have been like a Tuesday practice. So probably, unless they're trying to get guys some rest, we went full pads on a Tuesday work week. So they would have done that yesterday. Wednesday would have been a Tuesday, and so on and so forth. So, you know, tomorrow is already Wednesday, so that's going to be their, you know, slight walkthrough, going through game situations tomorrow as far as, you know – 2-minute drill, last play of the game with laterals, those type of things that you kind of fine tune the day before. So, you know, their big work days were today and yesterday, Monday and Tuesday. So, and that's hard to do coming off of a, you know, obviously Saturday, a Big 12 football game. That's tough to do. So I'm optimistic. I really think, you know, with these guys, let's see what, you know, this is going to be a real, you know, this is going to be a real character builder for this team. What do you do when you face adversity now on a short rest? Do you cave or do you stand up like a man and fight? So these guys got to bow their neck and come out there swinging.
And I think a really good opportunity for Alan Lazard to kind of plant a flag somewhere and show everybody, hey, I'm a big-time wide receiver here on this big-time stage against really good talent in the corners and defensive backs and defense for OU.
Got a couple good receivers this week, Lazard and then my man Westbrook from Oklahoma.
Yeah,
D.D. I can go.
D.D. Westbrook, recruited and signed at Blinn Junior College by none other than former Iowa State defensive end
Roosevelt Majit
while he was a coach at Blinn College, and now he's an assistant on Coach Tom Herman's staff at Houston. So, you know, Iowa State people, Iowa State connections everywhere, and Iowa State people have an eye for talent. Now, last thing about the OU game, getting ready here. At the same dinner conversation Wednesday night that we had about Jordy Nelson and you know how awesome he was at Kansas State, you also mentioned a really funny freshman year story at your first time rolling into Norman, Oklahoma. You want to share that story?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I think if you guys know me well enough, you probably heard this story before, but we're warming up as a quarterback group and throwing the ball around, jumping around. I turn around and get kind of nudged behind me. I turn around, and this is like, you know, your opening Big 12 eyes moment. I'm a 18-year-old snotty-nosed freshman standing there, and AP, Adrian Peterson's looking right in my eyes. You know, they look like I'm – he's the same height as me. I'm 6'4 with shoes on. AP was 6'4 with shoes on. He's looking me eye to eye. Just kind of nudges me and says, get out the way. And that was that, man. I kept it moving, but I turn around. I'm just like, all right. And that, you know, you do that walk where you walk away fast as hell with your eyes down like – dang, that was Adrian Peterson. And then, but little did he knew eventually, but Chris Singleton upended him, broke his collarbone, destroyed his Heisman campaign. So he probably doesn't like Iowa State very much.
And little did you both know that you'd be cheering him on for the rest of his professional life as a Vikings running back.
Well, maybe not much longer, man.
You're not cheering anything on with the Vikings right now.
His contract is going to be a dicey thing next year.
Yep. All right, we'll hit this music and we'll get to gambling.
Perfect.
All right, man, to the best part of our podcast, why people listen to us, probably not why, but we're going to go to the gambling section.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Good roll, man. This table's hot. I want some of this money. Get me in this game. Come on.
Sir, you're aware that there's a $50,000 buy-in this evening?
If that's the case, give me $100,000 in chips. Let me have a Diet Pepsi and some hot wings.
Baylor's at home against Kansas. Will they win by 100 or 105? All right, we're back here again after the bye week. Coming off of a few losses, That's usual with us guys. So maybe a good advice for when you follow our gambling segment, maybe just fade us.
Yeah.
Fade us. Totally go opposite of what we think. It works for me sometimes, so why not go ahead, guys? All right, so first game, Zach, this is me and you, and we'll get Woody's input at some point. But he'll be politically correct and say that, oh, I thought it was 17.5 when it was 17.
Always.
Anyway.
Always.
Moving on. Texas goes to Lubbock this weekend.
Ugh.
Lubbock is a three-point underdog at home, so Texas is favored by 3 points going into Lubbock after coming off of a big victory, I would say. What do you think, Zach?
Man, this is difficult because I would have picked against the Fighting Tortillas of Texas Tech if they hadn't looked so good last week against TCU. But their defense can't stop anybody, which scares me. But because they won last week, I'm going to pick give me Texas Tech in the points. What about you?
I'm right there with you. Anytime you throw the ball for 699 yards in a game, you have a chance. And against Texas's defense, you really have a chance. So I'm excited to see these Red Raiders. Cliff Kingsbury, you know, nothing new here. Mike Leach, disciple, they might throw it 100 times. I like Texas Tech in another good game. I mean, this is – the Big 12 is obviously down this year as far as, you know, the good ranked teams.
Doesn't mean it's not fun, though.
But in this middle group of – what's that?
I said it doesn't mean it's not fun to watch, though.
Exactly. This middle group of teams here, they love to throw the football. They like that hurry-up offense, and it's fun football to watch. So, but give me Texas Tech at home, taking the 3 points. Here we go. Moving on, Zach, to your favorite conference and arguably the best conference in the league in the entire college football this year, which kind of drives me mad. But Nebraska goes to Columbus, to Ohio State. Ohio State is a 17.5-point favorite at home against Nebraska. Number 9 ranked Nebraska, I will say.
Yeah, give me Nebraska because I think they lose this game, but probably by 7-10-ish, not 17.
Yeah, I think Nebraska, Mike Riley's got this thing going in the right direction for Nebraska. I think they're a better team than people think. People have written them off because they haven't played anybody well. They played Wisconsin pretty tough last week,
yeah.
Lost in overtime. However, I do think Nebraska covers that, but I've been to the Horseshoe. That's a tough place to play once they get on you.
Yeah.
But I still like Nebraska. Can we say anything about Braxton Miller? Heisman chances, Zach? What do you think?
Braxton Miller?
Yeah, I mean, Jared Barnett, JT Barnett.
Yeah,
JT Barnett.
Yeah, JT Barnett.
Swap that out.
Yeah, swap that out. JT and JB Barnett is our former quarterback at Iowa State. No, JT Barnett, Texas guy, I may add, Wichita Falls. No, I don't think he's going to win it. I think the Heisman conversation is for a separate show.
Is it Lamar Jackson's to lose?
I think it is Lamar Jackson's to lose, and I don't know who else you really invite to that thing.
Who's the guy from San Diego State, that running back? He's absolutely tearing it up.
Marshall Faulk Jr. I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think it's a really good conversation this year because there's a lot of solid players across college football, and there is standout teams out there. I think Jabril Peppers gets an invite because he does so much for Michigan, but I think that's a really good conversation and probably a really good gambling bet right now to put money on somebody for the Heisman Trophy because it's such a wide-open race, I think, other than Lamar Jackson, who's probably the only one who's got an invite locked up.
Well, we can't just leave it as it is. We've got to expand on college football for just 2 minutes, Zach. We'll get to the NFL games, but the first rankings came out tonight.
Yes, they did. What about
and
that?
Lo and behold, the dollar sign EC has two teams in the top four, one of them having a loss. Now, Washington, a Pac-12 team, how many losses do they have, Zach?
One. None.
Ah, that's right. None. And getting a lot of pub, got a great quarterback. Zach, tell me the conspiracy. You're down there. Is Texas A&M that good? I don't think they're that good.
I think Texas A&M is that good. Now, they're not better. Ooh. They're not better than Bama. Obviously, they just got rolled. They just got a 20-piece by Bama 2 weeks ago. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So that's the gap here. But what the college football playoff does, and everybody's got to remember this, the first three or four of these college football playoffs that they do every single year, they're built to create controversy and stir up conversation. Now, the college football playoff people aren't dumb because, one, they do that. They create buzz. But, two, they set it up easily here. So Alabama controls their own destiny. Clemson controls their own destiny, and then your arguments of Michigan and Texas A&M, while valid, but also these teams are going to come across, speed bumps of their own. Michigan has to play Ohio State. If both teams meet how they are now, Michigan with no losses and Ohio State with just one, the winner gets in, obviously. Now, if Washington stays unbeaten and goes through and beats a good Washington State team in the Apple Cup and then beats Colorado in the Pac-12 championship game, then yes, they get in over Texas A&M and everything works itself out.
Said no one ever. Colorado in the Big 12 in the Pac-12 championship game. My gosh.
They're number
15. That's good for them.
They're number 15 in these ratings.
That's incredible.
Anyway, we need to start talking about the Pac-12. Hold on. I know. The other question is there are, I think, what is it? Big 10 teams. Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Nebraska. Penn State. So what's that? Five Big 10 teams in the in the initial college football ratings. So for a conference that we've made fun of for the last 3 to 5 years, not doing terrible right now.
I know. And then, hey, yep, one time you can have a Big 10. The Big 12 has been, in, I would say, arguably better, not last year, because this is kind of where we're seeing our league. This is huge for the Big 12 to have a good finish and have a solid team every year, because things like this happen when you have the Big 10 teams and how that conference is split up. You can have the West Side teams, you know, basically run the table, and they all can have 10 wins, which is crazy to think about. Yeah. So, Big 10 obviously is better this year. I think that there's some very good football going on. Watching Wisconsin play defense is a lot. I mean, I'm not a defensive guy, but that is fun to watch. They're a very good defensive unit. So, taking them from the Big 10 this year, they're doing well. But we had to have that conversation. And so, you guys heard us. If you want to fade us, take Texas and the points in Lubbock.
Absolutely.
And you should also take Ohio State and the points. And Ohio State, you know, getting 17.5 at home. So some of these guys. But, yeah, we'll move on to NFL. This is a big one, and I wish we could have Jeff Woody on the show for this one. You know where I'm going with this, Zach. Broncos are a one-point favorite going to Oakland in our boy KO. What's going to happen?
And that's what? Is that Sunday Night Football? I think so. I think it's Sunday Night.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Yep, it's Sunday night.
Sunday Night Football, man.
That'll be a good one.
Give me the Broncos, but don't tell Kelechi. Give me the Broncos because I think the Broncos play solid start to finish. Now, it's not always the best football, but it's consistent and it's solid, where Oakland usually waits till about midway through the third quarter to turn it on and play well.
You can't fade our guy like that, man. You can't fade our guy like that.
That's all right.
I got to go with the Raiders.
I'll just tell him not to listen this week.
He'll have no problem not listening to our barely audible podcast. Yeah. Anyway, so what I'm saying is this. David, the Raiders are not a complete project. They are far from it. On defense, they struggle. Now, insert Denver. C.J. Anderson, not going to play. Demaryius Thomas, where have you been? The only people you can really rely on if you're Denver has been Emmanuel Sanders, and Devonta Booker has been above average.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is big because the Raiders, like we said, they're gonna throw it all over. David Carr threw for 513 yards passing last week. But I think that Denver does not want this to be a shootout. So they're going to try and ground and pound, and I think that gets them in trouble. Trying to run up, you know, trying to sit on the ball a little bit, and then on the other side, the attacking Raiders offense. So I think the Raiders win outright. This is one of those games where I think everything's aligning right for Oakland. So if you guys are really smart, you will follow Zach and the Broncos and not bet on the Raiders. But that's just my sound advice this weekend. I can't let my man KO down.
Dude, how good is the Raiders receiving corps? Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. I'm not kidding you. Michael Crabtree may be one of the top 10 players in the league right now.
He's incredible. And then not to mention Seth Roberts comes up with these acrobatic plays every week. And you know, they've got guys that can play, and then, you know, Jack Del Rio already is doing a great job. So it's fun to, you know, football is fun when the Raiders. I mean, we're kind of probably too young as millennials to say this, but people that are probably about 5-10 years older than us, football's fun when the Raiders are good, the Cowboys are good, the 49ers are shitty this year, but you know what I'm saying. So it's fun to see the Raiders, kind of the black and silver nation, be back a little bit. And then this one is a big one. This is the NFC's challenge here. America's Game of the Week, I think, 425 Eastern on, I believe, on Fox. Yep, NFC. Eagles at Giants. The Giants, Eli Manning and the Giants are a 2.5-point favorite at home in the Meadowlands. What do you think, Zach?
I like the Giants in this game. I'm not buying the Eagles hype. I know the Eagles played really well against the Cowboys on Sunday night for the most part, but I think if the Cowboys don't throw that really bad interception there right before the end of the half, I think the Cowboys probably win by more than two scores in that game in regulation. So I got the Giants, and the Giants are at home. So give me the Giants to win that game.
We disagree again. That's okay, though.
That makes for good radio.
I think that your Giants pick is probably going to be right, but I think there's something about it. At one point on Sunday night, and this is a rookie quarterback, he was 30 of 40. Carson Wentz, I doubted him. I literally thought Jared Goff was a better player.
He had 30 completions for 190 yards, though. I mean, he's not.
That's fine.
He's not going down the
field. He's
still
completing the football. Well, exactly. You got to make it easy on a rookie guy. That's what the Cowboys are doing with Dak. You got to make it easy. Roll him out. Get him on the edge. I like what they're doing with Wentz. And I think that defense, that front seven for Philadelphia is real. I think that Brandon Graham is having a heck of a year. He might end up being a Pro Bowl defensive lineman. So the former Michigan guy. But I think the Eagles cover here. I think the Eagles win outright in New York.
Oh, that'll do it for us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. Make sure you tune into us each week as we talk all things Iowa State football, breaking down games, schemes, assignments, stats, and previewing Cyclones games. We'll talk to you next week. Go State. Peace.